So this is Newbie Bloggers, How to Create and Monetize Your Blog. And we were just having an offline chat, the three of us, before I started recording, about being a freelance writer for magazines. And of course, when you're a freelance writer, you're writing about the same amount of words that you would write in a blog post. So you could actually use some of your blog post as magazine articles, and you could use your magazine articles that you're writing as a blog post. Now, you do want to be careful if you're going to write an article and have it in a magazine. If they're publishing it, you probably don't want to publish it as well in your blog, because that puts you in competition with the magazine, and they like to have fresh content for their magazine. But when you're writing it, you can think of it as a blog post, because it's going to be about the same length of words and paragraphs, and you're going to lay it out very similar. And so you just have to make sure when you're writing for magazines that you have a conclusion to your topic. Again, I like to write every magazine article very similar to the way I write my blog post. You like to have, you know, here's the problem or the situation, and then here's what I discovered, how to fix it, and then here's my solution. And you kind of want to have a magazine article do the same thing. I was just explaining before we started recording that if you're going to be a freelance writer for a magazine, that you need to be very consistent. And it goes right in line with blogging. Consistency is the key. Now, believe it or not, even if you're starting a new business or you're developing any kind of a business, the number one thing is to be consistent. Consistency will bring you success faster than anything else out there. Consistency is the key. So put it on your calendar. Make sure that you do it on a regular basis, whether you're writing for magazines or whether you're writing blog posts for your own blog. But you can write blog posts all day long, and it's like shouting, you know, into the tunnel. If there's nobody there to read your blog post and there's nobody to hear you, then you're not getting a lot of traction. So we want to talk about getting traction today on our blog post. So the number one, just now talking about it, is if you can be a freelance writer for some magazines, at the very end of your article where it says, you know, you're a freelance writer, you can put there that you have a blog and the name of your blog. And so folks will go, wow, I really liked what she had to say. I think I'm going to click over and read some of her blogs. So you could actually advertise your blog. You could advertise your business. It's however you want to put yourself in the bio. Now, and here's the joy of that. As you're writing for different magazines, you can create a little different 3 or 5 sentence bio for each one. It can actually slant toward the audience. So if I were writing in a cosmetology magazine, for example, I might slant over toward one of my cosmetology courses at the end. If I were writing for, I write just for a community magazine, it's just talking about Columbus, all about Columbus, fun things to do in Columbus. I can actually say that I'm owner and operator of the Caraway Guesthouse Bed and Breakfast. See, so you can market whoever you think the audience is. You can slant your bio to actually appeal to that audience. So that's the beautiful thing. So anyway, I'm going to share my screen. And today I'm going to go to the course. And for those of you that are listening or, you know, watching, listening in, if you go to, and right here it is in the URL, the Kathy Benner International Academy. If you go to the Kathy Benner International Academy, this is the course. This is what it looks like for the newbie bloggers, how to create and monetize your blog. And it's 6 steps to go from passion to passive income with your blog. Now, if you're in the mastermind, which this group, of course, is my mastermind, they get the course automatically included in the mastermind. So you don't pay for the course separate. It comes in the mastermind. So the 6 steps are picking a blog name, and then how to get your blog online, how to customize your blog, how to write a blog post and publish it, how to promote your blog, and finally, how to make money blogging. Now, in January, we talked all about the blog name and, you know, how to make sure you don't make it too narrow, because then when you start to write about other topics, you feel like, oh, if it's all about one thing, I can't write about something else. So make your topic broad enough that you can write about all the stuff you want to write about. And we covered all of that. And so for those of you that are listening in later that maybe didn't tap in today, you can go back and listen to that replay on how we discussed that. So today we want to talk about, and here's how the course starts. We want to talk about here, step number 2, get your blog online. And we talked about in our free meetup this month how a blog works and the 15 top blogging platforms. And again, that's recorded in the free if you want to go listen to that. But today we want to talk about how to start guest blogging when you are completely unknown. And that's what we're talking about. So Debbie mentioned writing magazine articles. That's like being a guest blogger when you're completely unknown. This is a perfect opportunity for folks to get to know you. So here is the deal. It says, I've got some hard news for you. It may come as a surprise if you're getting less than, are you ready for this? If you're getting less than 250 website visitors a day, which is all of us, your priority should be writing for other people's blogs, not your own. So let's talk about that. When you have low numbers, writing for your own blog is like shouting in a vacuum. No one can hear you. The benefits of guest posting are many. You tap into other people's traffic. You cultivate relationships with those other bloggers in your sphere, and you build a good reputation. And that's exactly, Debbie, what you're doing by writing for a magazine, is that you're tapping into that magazine's audience. You're tapping into their traffic. You're building relationships, not only with that audience, but with those other freelance writers. And so the benefits are many. And most importantly, you get do follow backlinks from various websites, all of which can help raise your domain authority. Now, when you say, what does that mean, a do follow backlink? When I'm blogging for someone else, they're going to post that blog. Now follow me on this. They're going to post that blog on their platform, whatever platform they're using. But at the end of the guest blog that you wrote, it's going to say how to connect with Debbie Marks, or how to connect with Ruth Pierce, or how to connect with Kathy Benner. That's a backlink from their platform over to your platform. And here's what happens. The more backlinks that link back to your platform, the higher you are in the search engines. Let me say that again. The more links from other platforms that link back to your platform, the higher you are in the search engines. And so that's why when everybody says, oh, do I have to have all these like Facebook groups and meetup groups? And do I have to have, you know, LinkedIn, and do I have to have Twitter? Yes, because when you create all those other platforms and then link back to your website or to your blogging platform, wherever you're sending folks, it raises you in the search engines. Does that make sense? And so anytime, but a lot of those you own. See, you own those other links, and you own the link that either your blog or your website is on. And so it'll raise you in the search engines, but it raises you even faster if somebody that is not connected to you points back to your platform. So now when you're guest blogging on someone else's platform, or you're writing especially, and Debbie, this is good news for me and you both, because we both have the opportunity to write for a virtual magazine. The first thing they're going to do in a virtual magazine is they're literally going to link at the end of that article that we wrote. They're going to link it back to us, to our platform. And so that's really going to raise us in the search engines. Now, here's what I want to say. Make sure you've got some content on where you're linking back to. If they just say, you know, Debbie is a freelance writer and lives in Pleasantville, Ohio. Yeah, well, okay. Somebody would have to really decide they wanted to connect with Debbie to dig in there to find out, well, how do I find Debbie? Does she have a website? Is she a blogger? What is she doing? How can I find her? So you've got to make sure that you make it easy. You want to make the path easy for the reader to link back to you. So have some content someplace where they can link back to. Now, what I've chosen to do is I have everyone link back to my website. My homepage on my website is my main landing page, because it basically is just a directory of everything I'm doing. And isn't that what we want when we land on a landing page, on a website? If we're searching for somebody and we go to their website, let's say I want to order dinner from Bob Evans. And if I go to the Bob Evans website, I want the website to tell me where their locations are. I want it to tell me what their menu is. I want it to tell me if I can do takeout. I want their website to tell me all that. Are you with me? So when folks link back to your website, they want to see what you're about. They want to see what products and services do you have. And this is where so many of us fail, is because we don't have some place for our readers to go. And it's the same with your blog post. If you have a conclusion in a blog, you know, like, I read this great book and it's an amazing book, and here's all the wonderful lessons I learned from this book. Well, where are you going to send them? And so send them on an affiliate link to buy the book. See, send them somewhere that makes them take the next step. Now, if I'm talking all about a great lesson that I've learned, maybe I'm going to teach it in one of my courses. I might link back to one of my courses. I might link back, you know, on an affiliate link to a program that I'm involved in where I get paid if somebody clicks through. But this is how you monetize a blog. So we've talked about several different areas here, but the point is that once you can get out onto other people's platforms and have it point back to you, you have to have some content. You have to have something that they get out of linking back to you. What's in it for the reader? What's in it for them? And so it's the same with us. When we're reading a great magazine article and we just fall in love with the author, I do a lot of reading on Amazon, and I've got, you know, I do a lot of audiobooks. And if I connect with that author, I want to see some content. If I connect with that author and it goes, oh, thanks for visiting. Okay, well, glad I visited. But if it says, this author also has this whole series, and this author has a course, and this author has a conference once a year, and this, you know, then I'm like, oh, I'm in. I'm in. Let me learn more about this person. So it's kind of what comes first, you know, the chicken or the egg. Do I start writing for other platforms and pointing back to myself, or do I get my platform and my content ready first? Well, it's kind of half and half. If you can start getting your platform ready, and this is what I recommend, take something that you're really, really good at and tie it up in a bow. Make it something that somebody can tap into right now, whether it's an affiliate link, whether it's a course, whether it's a conference you're going to. Take something that you're really good at or that you're really passionate about, and just concentrate on that one thing and make it look really good, even if all you have is a single landing page. If that's all you got, a single landing page, that's okay. And I'll tell you one just recently that happened to me is I was working, you know, with my URLs, and my one URL wasn't, it was hanging up. It wasn't landing on the homepage to all of my rentals. And so I got a hold of my platform, the company that my website is on. And I said, when my visitors click on my link, it's not landing them on the homepage. What's going on? And they said, well, you have two URLs going to the same website. And I said, right, they both should land on the homepage. And they said, well, that's what's causing the cog in the wheels, is it's then shooting, depending on how people click, it's the second person to click doesn't get the homepage. And I said, how can I fix that? And they said, don't have two URLs pointing to the same website. And I said, okay, well, the second website, and I'll share it with you girls because you girls understand what I'm talking about. I had all of my rentals page on my homepage, but then I had a separate page on my website just for my bed and breakfast, my guest house. So I wanted the carawayguesthouse.com to point to that page. And I wanted Kathy Benner Companies to point to my homepage. Well, it was the wires were getting crossed. Not when people tapped into Kathy Benner Companies, they weren't always getting the homepage. And when people tapped into Caraway Guest House, they weren't always getting the Caraway Guest House page out of that website. So he said, why don't you pull the guest house totally off of there and have its own website? And I said, well, I need to do that, but time. I don't have time to sit down and create this entire website for the Caraway Guest House. And so what I did is he pointed it to just the cheapest on their platform, the cheapest website, which is like $5 a month. He said, okay, for $5 a month, we've saved the carawayguesthouse.com URL. It's pointing over to a blank page. He says, but now your Kathy Benner companies will work fine. And he said, and when you get around to it, you need to create something over there. Well, we're just getting ready to go into season with the Caraway Guest House. And I thought, I can't have it just being a dead link going to under construction, you know, website. So I just went in, put a picture, because I have a channel manager. I just went in and put a picture on that homepage, put a link right in the middle of the picture that said, for more information and booking details, click here. And it clicks them right over to my channel manager. And I did that in about 2 minutes. Because it gave them some place to go. So what I'm saying is have some place for your readers to go that doesn't leave them hanging, if that makes any sense. And so I didn't spend a lot of time. I didn't spend a lot of money. I've got, you know, carawayguesthouse.com, which is the bed and breakfast. It just points to that landing page. And it's just and here again, you guys will get this as well, because we talked about building a better business in another course. But when you get a basic website, it usually comes with the home page, the about me page, and the connect with me page. You usually get a 3-page website is about as small as you can get. Well, I didn't want all those blank pages, and I didn't have time to fill those out. Now I can circle back and I can make a beautiful website for the Caraway Guest House. And I can even have a page of things to do when you're in town. And I mean, I can see all kinds of possibilities there, but I didn't have time. So I just wanted that home landing page and then flip it over to my channel manager just so it worked correctly, just so I had a place for folks to land. So I went in the back of the house where you normally would like create all those pages, and I just hid them. I just clicked hide this page, hide this page, hide this page. So I didn't delete them. I just hid them. So now I have the option that I can go back and unhide them one at a time when I have time and create another page of whatever information I want to add to that website. But in the meantime, if we get into season and people start searching for places to stay and they land on the Caraway Guest House and click through on it, it will at least land somewhere. And that's why they call it a landing page. That link is going to land there and it's going to tell them what they need to know. Click through, you know, for more information. As a matter of fact, I can actually show it to you. If I go to the carawayguesthouse.com, there is my new landing page. All I have, you'll see here at the top, just the home page. That's all it is. And I just put a picture in the back and I copy and pasted, you know, my definition here all on one page. This is it. That's all you get. And then I put my little copyright down there at the bottom, 2023 Caraway Guest House. That's the entire thing. And so now it says for information, details, and booking options, when you click on that, it takes you over to my channel manager, which is where my calendars. So now, see, the guest doesn't feel like they were left hanging. And that's my whole point. Don't leave your readers just hanging out there. Give them something. Give them something. So now, because look at this URL. Who's going to click on that URL? You see how crazy? People aren't going to remember hotels.cloudbeds.com/reservation/ULAPV. Who's going to remember that URL? I'm not going to print that on a business card. Everybody's going to say, I just want to go to the Caraway Guest House. So guess what? CarawayGuestHouse.com. But I want to get them over to the booking site. So now it was just a landing page and it goes straight to the booking site with one click. Okay. So you get my point there, is definitely give them some place to go. Give them some satisfaction of following you, okay? So now, in case you didn't already know, domain authority is a scale from 1 to 100 that predicts how likely it is that a website will rank on a page number one of the search results for any given keyword. And here's the bad news. If your domain authority is less than about 25 or 30, it's going to be extremely difficult for you to get a page number one ranking for any of your chosen words, keywords. So blogging is notoriously hard scene to break into. So here's why guest blogging should be a priority of yours. And if you're really serious about establishing a name for yourself. So the world of guest blogging. Now, not going to sugarcoat it. Guest blogging is also hard scene to break into. The day when every second website you landed on has a menu tab titled Write for Us is long gone. You know, there's tons of writers out there. So established bloggers get overwhelmed by guest posting pitches. And that's why at times guest posting can seem like an exclusive club. But there's a secret back door into guest posting. And that's what I'm going to reveal. So it's the highly effective way that I discovered quite by accident myself. It landed me my first, second, third, and fourth guest posting opportunity. But before we get into the details, here's what you have to understand about traffic building. There's only two types of traffic building techniques, those that work when you have an audience and those that work when you don't have an audience. So you have to ask yourself, do I have an audience? Do I not have an audience? I'm kind of right in the middle. I have an audience of my tribe, but I'm not getting 250 visits a day. And so I have to put myself in the category that I don't have an audience. So if you're a beginner blogger, you're probably only interested in techniques that belong in the second category, at least at this stage. So the magical back door. I've read a lot of tips from experts about guest posting. They all have different approaches, but one thing they all agree on is that if you write to them to pitch a guest post, then they've never heard of you, you won't even get your foot in the door. So now there's plenty of ways to try to get on an expert's radar. You can follow them on Twitter. You can comment on their blog post. You can sign up in their newsletter and so forth. These things work to a degree, but they don't really build relationships. It's relationships that open the doors to guest posting. So Ruth, this is right up your alley. It's all about relationships. And that's where roundup posts come in. Now, what's a roundup post? It's an interview, or rather it's any number of mini interviews all in the same post. You simply reach out to a handful of experts and ask them the same topical question. And you end up with a bunch of responses that form the basis of your roundup post. Let me say that again. You reach out to a handful of experts and you ask them the same question. And you end up with a bunch of responses that form the basis of your roundup post. Have you ever read a blogging post that said, the experts all agree on whatever the topic is? And when you read it, it just quotes maybe 10 different experts on the same topic. And all of a sudden, you've got a blog post. And guess what? All of those experts, because they've been quoted, they're going to put your blog over in their platform. And then they're going to link back to you. Okay. So here's the key steps. You have to decide on the question that you're going to ask. You have to find the experts that you're going to ask. You have to find their email addresses. You have to do the outreach. You have to write the article, and then you have to promote the article. Now, most of the work involved is putting together a roundup post happens in step four, doing the outreach. Now, let's go through those. Roundup posts are the key to building relationships with other bloggers and influencers in your sphere. There are at least 5 points of contact with each expert in the process of creating a roundup post. The initial outreach, the expert's response, your thank you email, your email notifying them that the post is live, and their email telling you that they've just shared it with their followers on Twitter or wherever they share it. So that's an opportunity for building close rapport with experts in your niche. Now let's talk about how you start a snowball effect, and wait for it, you write a second roundup post. When you start your second roundup post, you approach the same list of experts who contributed to your first roundup. So you're bypassing a lot of your steps because you already have them on your radar. Let's say in your first roundup, you had 25 experts and 15 of them responded. Now you need to search for some new experts in your niche, but you're in a stronger position than you were before, because when you email your new batch of experts, you can mention the first 15 experts that already responded. That starts to make you an expert in that field. And toward the end of the outreach email, you can say, just so you know, you'll be in good company. Here are the experts who have already responded. So now, see, they don't want to be left out. You see what I mean? How many times have you gone on like a Facebook post where somebody's having a conference and they're mentioning everybody that's joining? Susie Q just joined, you know, Sally Smith just joined. All of a sudden you start seeing all these other names and you're thinking, I want to go. Because see, they're using that as their clout. See, and that's what you're doing here is that you're just saying these folks have responded. So if I'm asking somebody about how to live a better life and I say Oprah has already responded, do you think somebody else would want to be in the same article as Oprah? Yeah. So if I can get a response out of Oprah, I can get a response out of a bunch of folks because they're going to want to be in the same article with Oprah because it's going to give them clout. See, relationships build up everybody. The tide rises all the ships. So when you can build up one person, you're building up everybody. Does that make sense? And so that's what you're doing when you're bringing attention to one person and then somebody else wants to be in the same article, you're rising everybody that's in the article. So as you can see, and I love calling it roundup posts, have the power to have a snowball effect as long as you write more than one and play it for the long haul. Now, each roundup post lays the foundation for the next, and each successive roundup post is bigger than the last. The psychology behind this is pretty simple. The people on your second list of experts are far more likely to respond when they see that other experts whose names they recognize have already responded. It's human nature. No one wants to be left out. So planning your guest post. The next stage in your guest post journey comes after you've done three or four roundup posts and you're ready to move to the next stage, which is the guest posting itself. You should now have a list of about 40 plus experts who have contributed to your roundup post and know who you are. You may even have built a close rapport with some of them, and those same experts no doubt have blogs, and most of them will accept guest posts. And it's important to remember that as a beginner blogger, the main reason you are guest posting is to gain relevant backlinks that will boost your own domain authority. You want them to refer back to you at the end of your guest post. Every time you do a blog post, there should be a link at the bottom. You know, to learn more about Kathy, click here. To see Kathy's schedule of events, click here. To join one of Kathy's courses, click here. Well, you're going to do that in your guest post. You're going to have how to connect with Debbie, how to join Ruth's next 5-day challenge. You're going to have those links at the end of your post. See, you have to have some place for your readers to land, okay? So the next step in this strategy is to complete a spreadsheet with columns for the expert's name, their blog URL, and their email address, and then another column entitled your domain authority. So now choosing your guest post topic, this is always the toughest one for me. The most common mistake people make when guest posting is choosing the wrong topic for their first guest post. Some people believe the best topic is the one they feel most passionate about. Well, they're wrong. When you're guest posting, it's not about you. It's about the blog owner. What does their audience want to read about? That's why when I'm a freelance writer for a magazine, I always ask the editor or the publisher, whoever is my connection to the magazine, I always ask them, what is your topic? It's not about what's my topic. It's what is your topic? And then I have to write to their topic, not to my topic. But I learn somewhere about midway in my article to segue it over to connect with something I'm doing. Okay. So again, I write for, I'll call it a blog post for a magazine. And last month, it was all about networking. So of course, about midway, I talked about my free meetups that I do every month. See, because it started off about them. It was all about networking because that's what the topic was. How to, you know, what does networking do for you? And so then I segued that, you know, if you want to practice your networking, I've got these free meetups. And so it was a place for those readers that were relating to my article. It was a place for them to land. And I had to have some content there. So I had actual meetups with dates and times and Zoom codes, and they could tap in if they wanted to. And so a couple of folks on some of my free meetups, I've said, my questions is, how did you hear about us? And I had two last week that said, from the magazine. See, so it works is my point. It works. And so make sure that you have some place for them to land, but start off. It's all about whose blog you're going to be a guest on. It's about what their topics are, not yours. Okay. So another common mistake is when people head over to a content search tool such as BuzzSumo to see what's trending or comb through the comments at the end of blog posts to see what the readers are asking about. These techniques will give you an idea of the topics that are going to be popular on your target blog, but they're time consuming and there's a simpler way. Go to the target blog and have a look at the right sidebar. Often there will be a heading that says our top 15 post or favorite post or the best of. Visit those and analyze them. So if I'm going to say I'm going to write for John Smith, I want to go over to John Smith's platform. Well, on his blogging platform, there should be over to the side, there should be a thing that says these are our top 15. It's the ones that that his readers liked the most. Okay. Those are the posts you want to emulate because those are the ones that his readers are really connecting with. And you want to get as much, you know, mileage for your buck as possible, as they say. And so that's the simpler way to do it, is to see what his readers are liking to read. So on the side, once you visit those top 10, here's what you want to ask yourself. What was the topic? What's the style of the headline? What's the style of the introduction? And what is the word count? So what is the topic? What is the style of the headline? What is the style of the introduction? And what is the word count? Most times you'll see just two or three topics in those 10 sampling blog posts. Look for patterns in the titles of the 10 sample blog posts. And then here are some common types. How to, it might say how, you know, I don't know. Let's pick something. How to publish a book. It might say how to get published. You know, so how to do something. It might say how to do something or achieve something in a time period, how to get published in a year. And, or it might say how I got published in a year. Or it might be the ultimate, a complete guide to getting published in a year. Or ways to do something, 6 ways to get published. Or must know tips, 6 must know tips to get published. So you see how to make a title. And these are great topics, great way to or discover how to get published or a proven method to getting published. So you see what I'm talking about. These are just ways to say it, different ways to say it that catches the reader's attention. And I don't know about you, but those catch my attention. If I'm just scrolling through Facebook and I see something 6 steps to, I'm like, oh, let's tap on that. What are those 6 steps? Or discover the secrets of, oh, what are those secrets? I catch myself clicking on those. I don't know about you, but I do, because it gets my attention. And that's all I'm saying here. These are ways to write your title to get attention. And then there's 2 main types or styles of blog post introductions. So the pain and the pleasure. So the first style is the hook, the problem, the solution, the promise. You know, 6 steps to getting published. The problem: I've been trying to get published for 10 years. The solution: I discovered the 6 steps. And the promise: take my course of the 6 steps and you can be published too. See, so you can fill it out that way. So that's the introduction. Or the simple transaction: the hook, the transition, the thesis, the conclusion. You know, the hook: I have 6 ways to get published. The transition: I finally got published and this is what I had to do to get published. I write my little thesis and the conclusion: now I'm a number 1 best-selling author. See, so you can write your introduction one of those 2 ways. Those are both simple introduction steps. I hope this is helping you in your writing. So the first type paints a vivid picture of the problem and the pain, and then it aims to hit the emotional triggers in the reader. The second is more formal, less emotional, and shorter. It simply introduces the topic and lets the reader know what the article is about. Anyway, you'll end up with a list of 10 or so blog post titles. And then under each, you'll record the type, the topic, what type of a headline, the style of the introduction, and the word count. If that's what the readers are relating to, then that's how you want to write your blog post. Because again, remember, it's not about you. It's about whose blog you're a guest on. You want to write their style so that their readers feel the continuity and connect with you. Now, it'll become clear to you as you do the analysis what topic you should write about, what kind of headline you should use, what style of introduction is appropriate, and what sort of a word length to aim for. And then follow this technique, and it's almost guaranteed your guest post pitch will be accepted. See, because that other person will say, hey, this fits right in with what I'm doing. Yeah, I'm going to publish, Debbie. This just goes right in line with how I write. I love it because Debbie did her homework, see, ahead of time. So now it's time to take it up a level. Remember, this step is a whole lot easier for you than others because you've already established a relationship with those experts. They've worked with you. They've shared your roundup post with their followers. They already know who you are. And so now here is, and I'll give you the exact template. It's like, hi, John, it was great having your input into my recent roundup post. I was on your website today and I wondered if you accept guest posts. So if I have three ideas for a guest post that I would love to submit, thank you for your time. So it says here, if the blog post has such a length, then definitely read the guest post guidelines. Some bloggers will even have guidelines right in their guest post. I don't yet. I want to add that because remember, the tide raises all ships. So I want to add a guest post guideline section right into my blog. So as people post on my blog as a guest poster, but see, keep in mind, I'm going to go back and I'm going to look at all these things. Does their topic go with my topic? Does their writing style go with my writing style? Will my audience appreciate this? So you see, when you turn it around and you're accepting somebody to guest post on your blog, you see what you want it to kind of fit with what you're doing. So you have to make sure you fit with what they're doing if you're going to post on somebody else's. And so your outreach template would then look like this. Many blogs that accept guest posts no longer advertise the fact they don't have a link anywhere that says that. So here is what that would look like. It was great having your input on my recent roundup post. I was on your website today and I see that you accept guest posts. I read your guest post guidelines and I love to have my post published on your blog. Please find below three possible article ideas and then put your ideas, article idea and what your title is, your intro, what your word count is, you know, go ahead and just give them that information of those three articles. It says, if any of them are suitable for your blog, I can have a draft to you within a week. Thanks for your time. Best regards. Now, once you start submitting guest post blogs, you need to keep track of what you submitted to whom. So you're going to have to, and Ruth, you'll be good at this because you can put it on a spreadsheet and you can just plug in who you've sent to and you can name. I love Google Docs. I like to write in Google Docs first. And so you can have your categories right there in Google Docs. You have different folders. You can put them in right in Google Docs. So once you start submitting, you have to keep track. And so you can create a Word document containing two tables. Now, one of the reasons for keeping a careful track of which guest post ideas you submit is that you definitely want to avoid submitting the same guest post idea to more than one blog owner. So now delivering the nitty gritty. Once your guest post has been accepted, you have to get to work and deliver it within the promised timeframe. Many blog owners will give you login details and give you restricted access to their dashboard, whatever platform they're on, or some just want you to send it over to them in a Word doc. But they will expect you to either upload it in the format that matches because they don't want to be an editor. They don't want to have to take your work and have to try to make it fit their blog. So the closer you make it fit, the easier it'll be for them to say yes. So they'll usually ask you to send any images such as a zip file, and then they deliver themselves, will optimize the images and insert them. When I write for the magazine, which is again, a blog post for the magazine, he tells me what font he wants me to use. He tells me how he wants it spaced. And he tells me how to attach my pictures because he wants all of the articles coming into him the exact same way. So that he can then just hand them to the editor and the editor then can make the magazine work. So the easier you make it for them, the more likely it is that you're going to get in. Okay. So don't go, hey, he ought to be thankful I'm sending him an article. He'll have to retype it and reformat it. No, he'll probably not use you, but maybe once. So make it easy. So then you can say, hi, John, thanks so much for this opportunity. I've just created a new post. Blah, blah, blah. Here's the title. Here are the images. I've attached a Word document. And please let me know if there's anything else you'd like me to do. So basically, you're trying to do as much work for them as possible. Now, don't forget about your author bio. This is what we're talking about. Always at the end of the email, with an offer to help with any extra formatting. For example, the blog owner may want you to do an internal linking from keywords in your article to their existing post. From your point of view, the author bio is the most important part of your guest post because you want them to backlink to you. It's what converts your guest post from a valuable resource filled with useful tips into a list building tool, branding mechanism, and a booster for your domain, your website. And so look at other author bios on the target blog and see what tone they're written in. Kind of see, because again, not every other blogger wants you to advertise with links. They may want you to advertise a different way, which is why in the magazine I'm writing for, he doesn't want any links. So I can't link back to my stuff, but I can say that I'm a number one best-selling author with a picture of my book. And what that does see is that gives clout and people are like, oh, she's an author. And then they can, again, I have an author's page on Amazon. Ruth, do you have an author's page on Amazon with your book? Yeah, because oftentimes people won't remember the title of your book, especially once you start writing more than one, but they'll remember you as an author. They'll want to follow you as an author. So you can go to Amazon and just search right inside of Amazon for Kathy Benner and my book will come up. And right there, I'm allowed to have a picture inventory. I put pictures of the magazines that I'm also a freelance writer for right there in my Amazon author page. And Amazon has picked up my podcast. So if somebody searches for me inside of Amazon, not only does my book come up and those pictures of those magazine covers that says I'm a freelance writer, but also my podcast comes up right in Amazon. Okay. So now there, in general, there's three or these are the bare minimum criteria for a good author bio. So keep it only 50 words or less. It depends on what they want, who you're writing for, but write it in the third person. Don't say I, say Debbie is the author of, or Debbie also, you know, and then tell the reader what you do, tell the reader how you can help them, and then include a link if the person you're writing for allows you to have a link. And then it also possible a quirky detail about yourself or something about your credentials or, and also a photo. Photo is very helpful, but why the quirky detail? Because probably that's the only thing your reader will remember. And when I'm writing about teaching, I always add my quirky detail is Kathy and her significant other Mark also own and operate the Caraway Guesthouse Bed and Breakfast in Kanawha, Winchester, Ohio. That's kind of a quirky detail. Because I don't always talk about the bed and breakfast. You know, I'm talking about how to build a better business and how to blog and how to write. And by the way, Kathy and her significant other, Mark, also own and operate the Caraway Guesthouse Bed and Breakfast in Kanawha, Winchester, Ohio. And a lot of people will remember that and they'll say, oh, I want to meet her. So I'm going to go stay at the bed and breakfast just so I get to meet Kathy. I've had people do that. They're like, I read something about you and I came to the guest house just so I could meet you. So there's all kinds of things you can do. Now, if I'm talking with a bed and breakfast group, then my quirky detail might go the other direction. I might say, by the way, Kathy is also a best-selling author of how to on lead, speak, and impact. See, so you can make the quirky detail go either direction, depending on who your audience is. Okay. So now let's tie up the loose ends. I always end my guest post with a line like this. Let me know how you go in the comments below. I'd love to hear your experiences with whatever we talked about. So you're inviting them to comment. And what you're doing, you see, this is where you're building relationships. Now, here's the big one. And this is the tough one. If you're inviting people to comment on a video, a blog, a podcast, you've got to test and measure that. You've got to go back and respond. Don't let their comments hang out there because you're not building a relationship. If I call you up every day and say, Debbie, how you doing? Ruth, how you doing? And you never respond to me, the relationship doesn't go anywhere. So if somebody comments, even if it's a negative comment, especially if it's a negative comment, be sure you respond. And responding to negative comments is another whole lesson. And we'll talk about that. But you have to police that. You have to monitor that. You have to make sure that you go in to those comments. Don't just let their comment hang out there. Okay. So it says, The number of comments an article attracts is the key metric that Google algorithm takes in ranking page searches. For this reason, most blog owners will want you to respond to any comments on your guest post. Just like when you go on social media, the more you respond to somebody's comments on your social media post, the more that post gets shown. The algorithm throws it back out in the thread. Okay. So relationships are key. Now, it's time consuming. I get that. And after a while, you're like, oh, how do I keep up on all this stuff? You have to designate a time. And so what I do every morning, because you can't, you get, I don't know about you, but you can get sucked in to social media. Yes, Debbie. Oh, you were just what you were on mute there. But you can get sucked into social media. So what I'm saying is make sure that you designate a time that you can respond not only to your social media post, but you can respond to anybody that's commenting on your blogs or on your videos. Make sure. And so what I do is I do it first thing in the morning. I take about 20 minutes, just make sure if there's anything out there, I make sure I respond to it. And then right before I go to bed at night, I do it a second time. And I just get in the habit of doing that every day. So I usually do it from my phone before I even get out of bed. I wake up in the morning and I'll pick up my phone and I'll just go through and respond. And I'll take about a half an hour and do all those responses and get it over with. And then I go on with my day and do whatever. And then right before bed, I'll go through. And if anybody's commented throughout that day, I'll respond again. Okay. And that kind of keeps it cleaned up for me. Okay. So now the tone in replying is important. So you always want to use the reader's name. You want to thank them for their comment, even if it's a negative one. And then you want to sign off wishing them all the best with their endeavors, whatever the guest post was about. Now, I usually try to mirror the original comment. If they leave a smiley, I do the same. If they're upbeat, I do the same. Now, remember that many comments are not really about providing valuable information. They're more about making contact and establishing relationships. See, so you want to build a relationship. So it's just like if somebody had a negative comment, if your girlfriend says, I'm feeling miserable today and I don't understand why you're doing what you're doing. Well, you might take that as a negative comment, but think about how you would respond to your girlfriend if she said something like that to you. That's how you want to respond to these comments on your post. If somebody goes, oh, I didn't get anything out of your blog, you know, okay. So how would you respond if that were a real person saying that to your face? And people can be a little bit more bold when they're writing because they're not saying it to your face. So they might be a little more, I'll say, cruel, if you will, in their comments. It's a good possibility. So be prepared for those. Okay. So in conclusion, interviewing experts and guest posting are two techniques that will actually deliver traffic when you don't have an audience. And again, we'll recap the main steps. You're going to write 3 or 4 roundup posts. You're going to cultivate relationships with experts in your niche. You're going to research the type of blog posts they publish, the topic, headlines, intros, word count. You're going to reach out to them with 3 winning guest post ideas, and then you're going to deliver your guest post and be a pleasure to work with. You're going to do as much of the work as possible. And then you're going to go back and you're going to respond to any comments and build those relationships. So that's the lesson for today. Ruth had to jump out. She wrote she was heading out. She had another commitment here right after our call. So questions, comments. Debbie, what do you think? That was a lot of information, but what do you think, Debbie?
First off, yes, I will agree. That was a lot of information.
Now that's all in the course and you have the course.
Yeah, so right, you can go exactly. Back
and revisit all of that anytime you want.
Yeah, and it's good to know that because when you're listening to a Zoom like this, you write down notes, but you know you're not getting the full benefit of the note. And I always like to go back and reread it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And but the there was so much there, you know, talking about posting on your platforms. And I did not know that when you buy a website, it comes with 3. I forgot about that. That was key.
It generally does, you know, yeah. It usually, you know, because when you're buying a website platform, you almost have to have your homepage, your About Me page and your Contact Me page. But now you can edit that to make it as big or as little as you want.
Right. And it was a good thing talking about your the little bio in the corner, mm-hmm. and your website and that, because I know I have to include that in this article. And I wasn't exactly sure what to put, but even though my article is based on grief, I still feel that sharing my going green or organic homesteading will put them in, because I refer to canning and freezing in this article. Mm-hmm. And so that will tie the whole thing up, which might create curiosity to go check out my blog site. And so that was very helpful, because you said it doesn't have to be huge. It's just, it starts, and if you keep them interested, they'll come back.
Yes, to the website. Absolutely. Yes.
And sorry. Sorry.
No, you're good.
So now the word count. Okay, I've already gone over the word count. So I know that I'm going to have to tweak it a little.
You'll need to trim that down, because the word count is all the room they have in the magazine. And you don't want them to choose what to take out. You want to choose what to take out, because you want to leave the important stuff in, which is toward the halfway point or later in the article. You somehow want to segue over to what you're doing. You want to have some connection there between what you're writing. And I don't know what segue sentence you could use, but if I were writing an article on grief and I wanted to segue it over to my products, I might want to somehow make my products the solution. Something like, you know, when I was really grieving, it really helped me to do my gardening. It really helped me to relax and connect with nature. And, you know, so something like that. See, that's a perfect segue on how you're connecting the gardening with the grieving.
Right.
There needs to be a connection. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you reminded me to write my author bio not in the third party, right?
Yes. Your author bio should be in the third person. Yes.
Right. So yes. Instead of using
your article is going to be in the first person, you know.
Okay, right.
You know, like I was grieving and, you know, I, but then your bio should be like somebody's introducing you.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it'll be in the third person.
And I like the bit with the quirky details, you know.
Yeah.
I'd have to think about that one, but I don't necessarily have to use it this time.
Well, I get it. You know what? If you're gonna write about grieving, and then somewhere toward the end of the article, the second half, somewhere you're gonna segue it over into how your gardening helped you through your grieving process, then in the bio, Debbie is an avid gardener. She has a blog post or a blog, blah, 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 with the title of the blog. And when she's not blogging, she's making fairy gardens.
Oh yeah. That's right. Very true. Oh, I forgot about that.
And people will remember you.
Right.
They'll go, exactly. You know, the girl with the fairy gardens.
I think that's about it for now. But I do also the key point. So you're not on your phone 24/7, but just responding in the morning and then going back at night and doing it. I think that's very, very important, because then you'll feel like you're not on your phone all the time, or you know, I never have any peace or whatever, because I'm constantly getting, you know, things.
And you know what I did? I turned the notifications on my phone off. Turn off those notifications, because it just pesters you all day long. You keep thinking, I got to look at it and see what the notification was. And if you go in and answer those first thing in the morning, and then you answer them at night before you go to bed, you've not let days go by. You've answered it in the same day they've made a comment. You've answered it. You've responded right to their comment the same day, which is plenty soon.
Yeah, because actually when you look at it, there are people that they're only going to respond once or twice a day. I don't want to be one of those that, oh, I got a message, I got a quick answer it. So they know that, you know, I'm interested. You have to get rid of that thought, because, you know, they're doing the same thing, or they want to do the same thing. So
yeah, you have to get into a pattern that fits your lifestyle.
Right.
And the only time that I have to really keep an eye on my phone is because with my rentals, I could get a maintenance request. And if it's a serious one, I need to address it right away. So I do have my maintenance platform notify me. That's the only notification I have on. And then that way, if that notification goes off, I know it's a maintenance request. Now, a lot of times it's not an urgent one, but I need to look at those just to make sure it's not an urgent.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
But, you know, a comment on a Facebook post is not urgent.
No, no. And I like what you said, where mirror their response. You don't have to go into a whole paragraph. And I can see that in some of them. Like when you've written something and then they respond with just emojis, you can do the same thing. At least it lets them know that you've read it.
And it increases the algorithm of the platform.
Because
you're building that, because you're going back and forth and it's building, you know, electronically, the algorithm says, oh, there's a relationship here. They're communicating back and forth. So then it puts it back in the feed more often. It'll say, oh, this is a popular post, we're going to run it more.
You know, so today, in that class, it talks about a magical back door. And I think this whole session is showing you what's available in the back door that you really need to pay attention to a little bit if you want to get higher in the algorithm.
Algorithms, yes. I know. I have a hard time with that one too.
So other than that, I think this has been great.
I love it. Yes. You've had a lot of great takeaways. I love that. Well, we're a little over on the time. So Debbie, hang in there. I'm going to stop our recording and then we're going to chat for just a minute. But thank you everyone for listening. This has been great information today, and you can actually go right into the course and find everything that we talked about today. It's all right there in the course. And if you join the mastermind, which is what we're in, you get the course for free. So join us. So we'll see everyone next time. And Debbie, hang in there.
I will.